Hello and welcome to Loopholes, your weekly discussion podcast about all things esoteric and esoterotic. I'm Kate Cheryl, hello.
I'm Ian Bosworth, hello.
How are you, Ian? Have you had a nice week?
Not really, I'll be honest with you. I'm not very well at all. I'm falling to bits, in fact. I think I'm going through a bit of a rough patch. I'm about to be told I'm deaf.
That's a fun, very ominous exciting thing on the horizon.
Going to get enormous hearing aids.
Right, good.
And I've also found out, I'm going to have this confirmed for me in a couple of days, that I have trigger finger in two of my fingers, my little finger on my left hand and my middle finger on my right hand. I've got trigger finger in both those.
That's quite manly.
Yeah, delighted with it.
Yeah.
Delighted with it. Because I've had so many rubbish ailments, like blood clots and kidney stones and diverticulitis and all that sort of nonsense. It sounds awful. But trigger finger sounds super cool.
Doesn't it?
But ironically, it's possibly the, well, maybe after kidney stones, the second most debilitating thing I've ever had. And it affects my artwork, it affects my editing, it affects my writing, it affects everything.
Yeah.
I've been ruled out.
Yeah. Who's been in hospital this morning? Oh, it's me. So, let's have a look at your comments.
Well, do you want to talk about your hospital appointment?
Nope. Absolutely not. No one's business.
That's why I didn't bring it up. We're both having a bad time of it, eh?
Yeah, it's not great.
Which seems fair.
Absolutely. We are the worst people in the world.
Yeah, absolutely awful people. And the good people are just running amok, aren't they?
Yeah.
And us awful people are being really battered here at the minute.
Yes, that's...
that's fair. That's karma, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, what we're going to do today, I'm going to tell you now, I want this to be a tight recording because, for the aforementioned trigger finger, I can do this, chatting with you on Zoom, easy enough, that's no problem at all. Editing it is another matter entirely.
Yeah, no, that's understandable. And I've got to go out and talk about dead people shortly after this as well.
You're doing a talk, aren't you?
Assembled crowd.
Is it a big crowd?
Probably not.
Okay, well, that's... just trying to help yourself promote there, but you decided to take it.
Sorry, massive. Whoa. You know, do you know where it is, actually?
No, just go around my mum's house.
It's the Hallam FM Arena.
I presume it's the studio space.
Yeah.
Come on, let's do the comments. I've got loads. Right. How many comments have you got?
Not loads. So let's kick off with me.
Okay.
So last week, obviously the scone debate was brought to an end, thankfully.
Good.
And we instructed everyone how to communicate with both the past and the present through a knackered old computer. Well, Tango says, wow, he hits the big 20th birthday and now he's not a teenager anymore. He's too big, grown up and mature for swear words and popular phrases like dude. I bet up around here is so big and strong, he's able to spread his own butter on his scones now.
I see. So Tango's taking exception because I pulled Tango up for speaking like Bart Simpson last week. I say, I am a grown-up now. I am a proper grown-up now.
Well, Tango goes on to say that, I appreciate your answer, Kate. I thought it was very interesting. Thank you. As is this fine podcast. I would go so far as to say seeing a new episode appear in my feed is poggers, even if that trendy lingo is beneath some grown-up mature adults.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. I mean, I genuinely don't know what that means. But I am a grown-up. I'm a very mature person. So I'm glad that Tango realises that and realises that I am a proper grown-up. I've taken a break today from my other grown-up activities of trying to put together a podcast about Star Wars figures.
I was going to say, the lovely mature adult who's got four full-size Star Wars replicas in his house.
Yeah.
Lovely.
I've had no joy, by the way. I've been approaching people for my Star Wars podcast. It's not a Star Wars podcast. It's a vintage toys podcast. And no joy. It's what I thought. No, I suspected this would happen. Yeah. Nothing back.
We'll see. I believe in you.
Thanks.
So, Sophie Cleverly.
You left, didn't there?
Sophie Cleverly says, if I'd known about this when I was a teenager, I definitely would have attempted some time-travelling MSN Messenger pranks.
Is MSN Messenger still a thing?
I don't think so. I saw quite a depressing little... meme sort of thing the other day saying one day you updated your MSN Messenger status for the last time.
Right. I don't recall if I ever did statuses on anything. I don't think.
Not song lyrics.
Maybe I did. I can't remember. A long time ago, wasn't it? Got next one.
That's your lot. Your turn.
Are you effing me?
I'm not effing you, good sir. I would never eff you. Two comments is certainly not poggers. Am I using that right?
I don't know. I'm more alarmed at the idea that you would never F me. What, come what may? What if we were on a desert island?
Not on a podcast, Ian. Some of us, you know, like to be classic.
Well, very disappointing from your patrons there. My patrons have left 20 comments, I'm afraid. So if we were doing it as a competition, yeah, I'd be winning that. But given my sort of downtrodden mood this week, I've just found it annoying. So, yeah. Bearded Ian, thank goodness for cancelled appointments. Cheers, Ian, from Ian. Oh, that's because it was Bearded Ian's birthday and I was meant to have my ear vacuumed out and I didn't have it, so I remembered his birthday because of that. It's nothing to do with loopholes. Kevin Moore, the obese trapeze and potential future nemesis. I thought we established that you were now an actual nemesis. Mm. I would usually use the excuse of strong pain meds, my dyslexia or my use of the slidey keyboard for my poor messaging skills and lack of proofreading, but it is really because I'm a bit thick. but not thick enough to read the Daily Mail, Kevin has added as well.
Oh,
I'm not
right,
knocking anyone for typos. I'm just saying it just takes like a couple of seconds of your time just to check that something that's going to be read out is actually what you want to say. Otherwise, we might misrepresent you.
That we might.
If you type something wrong, if you put did instead of didn't or what have you, we're going to misrepresent you. So it's worth it from your point of view because we can't take full responsibility for what you type. Andy Walker, 1990s nostalgist, especially the last time I saw a floppy disk. Ree Kanye. Okay, so this is the whole thing that I said about Kanye West last week. This is relevant, though. This isn't scones.
Yeah.
I always used to think, like with Nick Griffin on Question Time, let them talk, eventually they'll spout so much S that people can't take it seriously. But now people actually do, so no, we can't give them an inch now. Nice to hear the return of the word dibs, though. Yeah, and Andy, did you, like us, after hearing the word dibs, because after, I know after I said it, this happened, do an immediate Google search to see if it was an offensive term or not, because we did.
Yeah, we're safe. Don't worry, everyone.
Yeah, we found out we're all good with dibs. Well, I think there's, for me, I don't know how you feel, Dr. Kate, but for me, there's a clue in the question there, or the statement, like with Nick Griffin on Question Time. I'd forgot Nick Griffin even existed. That was a blast from
Same.
The past, that name.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that Question Time very vividly.
I remember him doing some cooking on YouTube. I recall that. But other than that, he's a forgotten, outdated, dreadful period of history, isn't he, really? Yeah. So I guess the idea to let them talk, eventually they'll spout so much that people can't take it seriously, appears to have worked in that case. I do understand the point, though. I do get that. And I think I alluded to that last week when I said madness in great ones, not that Nick Griffin was a great one, but you know what I mean, should not on watch go. So, you know, it's not that you can't check these things, but I think drawing too much attention to it and making it into a considered debate gives them credibility that they wouldn't otherwise have. If you have smart people debating in a grown-up way with thick people, then you've got a problem there because you're raising the thick person up to your level rather than being frankly above it. Am I being arrogant?
I think you're completely right. It's all about context, and you can recontextualize someone who's very, very negative and corruptive by putting them in a situation where they should be taken seriously. So by recontextualizing a dangerous div, you know, there could be quite serious ramifications from that.
That's what I think. It's a huge discussion, this, in all fairness. It's massive, because I know there's nuance to all this, of course there is. But the documentary the other week about Kanye West, and I saw these brilliant, erudite, intelligent, smart people talking about that situation as if they were the same level as him,
rather
as if he was the same level as them.
Yes, yeah.
Like for a good example is, many, many years ago, I had several run-ins with a kind of a right-wing shock jock kind of bloke.
Yeah.
And his tactic was always, well, come on my show and we'll discuss it. Come on my show and we'll do this. And then when you'd be like, this is stupid, I'm not coming on your show. Then it would be like, oh, chicken, oh, refusing to come on my show. Oh, won't. So it's like, no, you don't have a right to have me on your show. Your show is really beneath me.
Yeah.
And I think it's that kind of attitude of like, no, what you're saying is so far beneath my intelligence. I don't mean mine, I mean one's, someone who's smart, that by engaging on it on an intellectual level, you're pulling them up.
Yeah, it's very schoolyard, because it's the same sort of argument as, do you fancy Darren? Do you fancy Darren? No. Oh. Yeah, no. Yeah, sounds like yes to me. Oh my God. Ian fancies Darren. You know that sort of thing.
I don't even. Rob Hellfire Graves. I had all the same thoughts and responses as you, Ian, whilst reading this absurd book, and I loved every second of it. I think I might be a rageaholic. Can I just say for the record, I did not read the book.
No.
But I can tell you, it has been left on my kitchen table.
Yeah, it was. After I realised how much it was blooming worth, and I thought, I'm not shoving that back in my rucksack on the train.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll be big yellow storage for you then, shall I?
Oh, thank you, it's very kind.
You've left it in the exact place where you left all them other books that time. Do you remember when you're not the good off a stormtrooper?
I'm sorry.
Louis Crawford Wilson. Sadly, I was talking about the BBC, so this is a correction from last week.
Yes, I thought it was the Daily Mail, yeah.
Yeah, we thought... Well, you told me that it was the Daily Mail. I had no idea who it was.
Well, it's purely because I've been seeing so many ghost-based articles from the Daily Mail circulating online at the minute.
Yeah, so the discussion we had, I guess, is relevant to the Daily Mail, but that wasn't who Lou was talking about. Lou continues, it seems that they've done a heavy pivot for their online output towards paranormal topics, and now it's about to be on TV. There feels almost safety with parts this just being online, because people online are usually looking for it. I'm literally reading what you've typed here, by the way. Because that didn't scan to me either. Once it comes on TV, especially channels like the BBC's ITV and Channel 4, it almost legitimises it. It turns a story into a fact. I mean, I'm going to dispute that, because that it depends how it's presented, like how it's put forward, I think.
But, yeah, more people read headlines than click on articles.
Yes, yes, that's true. People telling the ghost stories have a belief that ghosts are real. Many preface these stories by saying, I used to be a sceptic, or I used to think this was all rubbish. But it's hard to find any evidence of this. When the BBC spends 10 weeks telling a ghost story online and leaves out the fact that the main witness was an alcoholic and believed in witches until the last episode, shows that they're trying to bury the truth. I mean, again, it might not be that they're trying to bury the truth rather than they're trying to keep people coming back next week. Cynical tricks are employed, and that's not a new thing, that I don't think.
No.
All the points you made apply to it. I don't think I'd even seen anything from the Daily Mail, as it's largely right-wing, as Kate said, chip paper. But I think the BBC should be held accountable for their content, as it's paid for by the public.
Mm.
Somebody speculated, by the way, Rob Hellfire Graves has speculated about what Louis is referring to, what specific programme Louis is referring to. I'm going to leave all that out, because the main reason being is I'm not familiar with this show, this podcast. Mm-hmm. I know of it, but I've not listened to any of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's true of you too, I think.
Yeah.
So it would be very unfair for us to start, you know, giving voice to criticism of another podcast that we've never even heard. You know? So I'll take you on trust that that's the kind of thing that is going on, but I've also said my caveats within that of why, technically, from a production point of view, you would do that sort of thing.
Yes, yeah, of course. I certainly think how these articles on esoteric, ghosty business, anything that the BBC produces relating to that as a news article, it should be very clear that it isn't presented as factual, that maybe it's an opinion piece or a fluff piece. You know, it's again, I hate repeating myself, but it's contextualised appropriately in the immediate image and tagline of the article. Because like we see on social media, whatever it is, especially recently, people often look at the image and the tagline at a push, mainly just the image, and then completely react on that rather than the content of the article.
Right.
So for things to be very clear from the off that this is an opinion piece, this is an entertainment piece, as with all paranormal TV programming, they've always got to say this is for entertainment. It's the same principle. You've got to get that in from the off.
But should it not be tacit if something's a created, produced piece of work with a presenter presenting it?
Yeah.
That it's an opinion piece, really?
Like, well, it should be, but can I refer you back to your earlier point of divs?
Yeah, no, I know that. I know, I'm just trying to be fair with this is what I think I'm trying to do. So I think there's a danger, potentially, even with things like the thing of this programme's for entertainment purposes only. Now, personally, I don't need that because...
Well, yes, of course.
Because I know that what's happening is either presented in a certain way, as is all television. Let's stick with television. As is all television, you know, it's all going to be a bias and it's a produced thing to give the maximum effect of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So really, the need for this program's for entertainment purposes only doesn't... I don't need that.
No, but Ofcom needs it, so...
Yeah, no, I get that as well, yeah. But I don't know. I think, again, I'm sort of trying to form my opinion, a more conclusive opinion on this. But I think, again, this is the kind of thing where responsibility has to fall on the shoulders somewhat of the audience. So Louis told us this whole thing. Now, Louis's smart enough to work that out. Louis's noticed all that. He's got all that completely, you know, and understood it and been like, oh, this shouldn't be presented like this. But really, your concern is... for other people, which is a valid concern, but that's, you know, it's not fooled you.
Yeah.
Do we need to worry about other people? Because, you know, if I've learned anything from this, in the loosest possible terms, community, it's that no matter what they're told, they won't listen. No matter what they're told, they'll stick to their guns. No matter what evidence you present, no matter how many times you say, this is for entertainment purposes, no matter whether the Fox sisters say, we faked it all, they won't have it. They're utterly radicalised. Yeah. So it's irrelevant whether you say it's for entertainment or whatever. It's irrelevant.
Yeah.
As far as I understand, and again, this might be quite unfair, but this the thing that you're talking about is kind of like the pop music of podcasts. I don't even say that in a disparaging way. I mean, it's kind of... it's pretty light, as I understand. You know, it's pretty mainstream and kind of hitting the masses, rather than being a deep dive, particularly in reality.
Yeah.
But again, that might be incredibly unfair because I've never heard it.
No, same. I think when it comes to any type of podcast or any type of media-based entertainment, whether it's TV, film, even art, mixed media, if you're doing something, if you're taking opinion, reports, different types of media to create your own final product that has a narrative, anything that contains a narrative has to be sculpted. You have to sculpt that narrative. Yeah. So I think it's easy to, especially with the amount of podcasts that are out today that are true crime podcasts that we've covered before, news podcasts, things like that, we're so used to fact being presented in a narrative way. That when we find stories of weird goings on, stories of people communicating with the past via the computer, and I say this in the very loosest sense, we can subconsciously take that in as another factual report rather than another opinion piece or another report of some biased reporting or some unsubstantiated report.
But I guess my contention is, even if you explicitly state otherwise, believer's going to believe. So... the people that believe in that stuff anyway, it's neither here nor there to them. And the people who wouldn't believe it don't need that saying because they already are smart enough to know that it's all nonsense anyway. So really, it's completely redundant as an idea because it serves no actual purpose, I don't think.
No, I think to an extent, definitely. I mean, how many mediums could we name that have been debunked or exposed? And they're not, have still got large amounts of followers, not just 19th century mediums, but contemporary ones too.
Yeah, completely.
It's just the way of the world.
So I'm not knocking back what Louis said at all. I understand the point, but I'm not sure that the practicality of that would make a blind bit of difference regardless. Yeah. Same as, I bet there's someone in the world still, I bet you there is somewhere, and I use this as an example a lot, who still thinks the Blair Witch Project is real.
Oh, 100%.
And still thinks that what was said in it about it being a film was all part of the cover-up.
Yeah.
And likewise, I like the idea of it being real. So when I watch that film, which I do actually alarmingly regularly, when I watch Blair Witch, I absolutely suspend disbelief. I love the idea of it being real. I really like it. I know it's not, but I really like it and enjoy it based on that. Imagine if this was real, which is what is the rule of most fiction, isn't it? You have to imagine this is real and believe this is real to enjoy it.
Yeah.
But at no point in Blair Witch does it say this is fictionalised, this isn't real.
Yes.
Quite the opposite, in fact, it says. it says that it's real. Which is, again, something that I like that as a trick. You know, I might be... and maybe I'm contradicting something else I've said at some point here, but, I'm just speaking for today. I like that idea of saying this is real. I'm just lying. This is real. Anyway, we continue. Rudy Manchego. Hello, long-time fan, first-time commentator. Welcome, Rudy. Manchego, my favourite cheese. Really is. Firstly, was catching up on last week's episode this morning whilst on a long drive for work, and this week's dropped ready for my return journey. Thanks for the pre-planning. Much appreciated. You're more than welcome, Rudy. We like to consider everybody on this podcast. Just wanted to say that not only have I had a BBC computer since the 80s, but my mum also believed herself to be a medium when I was growing up, and despite the combo, at no point have oldie-worldy people typed me any messages.
Ah, oh, gutted.
Surely my house would have been ripe for it. It did have a great knockoff Donkey Kong called Killer Gorilla, though. Thanks for the great content. Thank you, Rudy, and thank you for reminding me of Killer Gorilla. That is absolutely my vintage. Killer Gorilla was a huge game when I was at school. I had it for the Acorn Electric computer.
Oh, very good.
Which was my first computer. I don't have a 10. Yeah. M. Nicholson, elaborate way to rid yourself of a third wheel, innit? Admire the bowl leap from cat food pyramid to 16th century ghost in the machine, though. Is that because there was another person at the house? Is that what that refers to?
In the early stages of the story, there was a lodger, wasn't there? There was a friend who was going to work on some... He was going to borrow the computer to do some of his typing.
Do you think what had happened is they were all friends, and then the other two were secretly banging, and they were like... Well, we don't want to tell our friend, so we'll crack on that there's all ghostly goings on. And then they'll hoof off, and as Em puts it, rid themselves of the third wheel. But then they're like, well, we've got to maintain this story, because otherwise he'll come back.
Well, what the problem is, what you've just described there is Bawley Rectory.
Right, can I just explain, though, as you were telling me that, it totally is that, but as you were telling me that then, you said what you've just described there is, and you pointed away from the screen...
Oh.
As if you were pointing to another room, as if you were also living with two people and going, well, what you described is mouthing it, pretty much what's going on here. Yeah.
They don't know I know.
Yeah. Tango of the Robes. I don't much care for any preserve the space-time continuum cop-out. Right, I'm just trying to warn you, Tango. If it's possible to alter it by asking about benign, non-falsifiable minutiae, then I think it's perfectly acceptable to alter it to prevent the hypothetical Tiny Tim from getting rolled flat by the 84X and Nantwich as he ties his shoelaces on the road. Excellent podcast. Keep up the good word, dude. P.S. Floppy disk drives do still work with modern operating system. Well, isn't Tango fighting this week?
Thank you, Tango. So once again, Ian, would you like to borrow my USB floppy disk drive?
Goodness me, Tango. Don't have a cow, man. Flipping heck. Settle down, mate. Stuart Smith, thank you, Ian. I feel like I've just completed Patreon now. That's because I said Stuart Smith's comment last week was the best comment ever. In fact, let you into a secret, Stuart. I wanted, after reading your comment, to play that music that goes... But I don't know what it's called. Now we get into it. Annette Truby, I disagree with you on the suggestion that people who believe in the paranormal... specifically when it's obvious to most of us when a situation is clearly easily explained, are thick. I'm going to contend that without being certain. I don't think... Well, you did say suggestion. I don't think I said that people who believe in the paranormal are thick. I don't think that's what I said.
No, I don't think so.
I was referring specifically... I may not have been clear enough, but I was referring to dinner ladies. I think so.
I would hold dinner ladies as a subdivision of people who believe in the paranormal, but not representative of the whole.
Well, here's my statement in return to that, is that I'm doing a podcast with someone now who has some paranormal beliefs and has some, you know, beliefs outside of the ordinary and stuff, who I don't think is thick. In fact, she's the smartest person I've ever met in my life.
Christ, you really haven't met that many people, have you?
But as I said earlier on, there's only me and her left.
Yeah.
I think it's much more complex than that. This is Annette continuing. Using cults as an example, they often target young university graduates, professionals, and people who are likely at a crossroads in life. These people are potentially looking for a direction and are more easy to manipulate because of that. Again, point of contention. I don't think being academically intelligent necessarily makes you a smart person.
No, definitely not.
You can be thick and get a degree, which brings us back to Dr. K. Often, people who believe in the Wrexham Heads, Bigfoot, time-travelling computer nerds and cursed crying boy paintings are looking for a community, a place to feel safe, a direction to go in. Yeah, that's also true of Nazis. Often they're bereaved or worrying about their own mortality, so the paranormal gives comfort. It's easy to say they're thick, but the reality is it's much more complicated. Well, I know, but I'm looking for a shorthand in an hour-long podcast.
Yeah, I think definitely the things that were negatively related towards people that hold paranormal beliefs would hold fast with dinner ladies. But
yeah.
I wouldn't regard myself, I hopefully wouldn't regard myself as a dinner lady. And I don't think that any people listening who hold paranormal beliefs would also be a dinner lady, because they would have tapped out after about 5 minutes.
The dinner ladies know the dinner ladies, though. That's the question, isn't it? It's like sort of, you know, villains, bad people, villains. There's the age-old question of do they know that they're villains? Do they know they're baddies? So would you even know? I know it's more nuanced than what I said. In my defence, I've been discussing this for a huge chunk of my life now.
Yeah.
An enormous amount of my final years have been wasted on this. I would allow myself a moment of going, oh, God, they're just thick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've just been exasperated with the whole thing. And I've tried every intellectual argument. I've tried every discussion that sometimes it just boils down to some people are just stupid. And what I do fundamentally disagree with is that you're not allowed to say that. I've got a problem with that. Because I think when stupid people do dangerous things or say dangerous things, not to go, well, come on, let's be fair here. It's like, no, there's no fairness at all. Morgan Oxborough Scullion. Oh, no, I time slipped and my comment got attached to an episode before it existed. You're dead on with my mistake. And I've been lucky enough to get to listen to 4 new loopholes in 1 week. So now I'm back to the present. Mm. Another cracking episode. This vertical time slice thing sounds like great fodder for a science fiction story, with fiction being the operative word. I mean, there's loads of them, isn't there? P.S. My wife has now heard exactly 2 minutes of this podcast. Well, thank you. Well, lovely to have a new listener. The 2 minutes where I was being called a Wally. Her review was 4 stars, some funny bits. P.P.S. It's pronounced Oxborough, as in Edinburgh or Middlesbrough. Well, I do apologise.
We're learning.
Why do you only get told off by posh or posh-sounding people?
It softens the blow a little bit, doesn't it?
I apologise profusely, Lord Morgan Oxborough Scullion III. Diana Francombe, how people are taken in by absurd and nonsensical claims like the one featured in this episode is always the most fascinating thing for me. Computer technology was really mysterious itself back then, so maybe that's part of it. Anyway, I have just binged the whole back catalogue of loopholes.
Oh, God.
And have a question which sums up my own loophole. I mean, Diana, really? This is not the sort of correspondence we wish to receive.
God.
With the whole paranormal business.
Yes.
Life after death claims seem to rely on a soul that continues after the body is dead, but somehow retains all the information that was in the brain. So when is this soul created? In the womb, or does it exist before birth? If so, why don't unborn souls haunt us? I'd be interested in your thoughts. P.S. Thanks again for such interesting content. And sorry, this is so long. Diana, wait till you hear what's to come in my comments. In fact, is this going to be one of those where we go comments?
I've got some good stuff.
But how long is it? Because I've still got 4 more comments, including one that's the length of a dissertation. So let's just make this a comments episode, I reckon. We'll just do comments. We do that from time to time anyway, don't we?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on what Diana said there? Diana wanted answers.
She did. About a soul potentially existing.
The soul.
Well, it's quite... I find the idea of... Well, it's pre-existence, really. Pre-existence of the soul. Quite an interesting thing, because across religions, I think Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, certainly the LDS, Mormons... and some Christian sects, but very, very few, believe in the field of pre-existence, and that the soul exists before the human body. So it's one of those things where it kind of depends on the individual, what their beliefs are and what their religious background is.
Does that cover reincarnation as well? So would that be that you jump from vessel to vessel?
It would be cyclical, wouldn't it? It's a bit like with Buddhism, there's the cycle of life and death. The soul goes through the underworld and is then reborn, so... I suppose that would apply to reincarnation and kind of cyclical souls. But I think in a lot of churches, this is kind of pertinent to what's happening in America at the minute, really. A lot of Christians with particularly strong views on bodily autonomy and so forth believe that the soul exists from the moment of conception. And so that is a sticking point, obviously, in terms of women's rights through the years. So there's that belief system, but plenty of other well-known thinkers like Plato. Plato believed that the soul existed before the human body itself. But then he also believed in the theory that when you were born, your mind kind of came preloaded. So you already had your beliefs, your knowledge, your ideas, like you were formed and plopped into the world, and then you just had to kind of reaccess it.
So in that case, by Plato's reckoning, your intelligent levels are forever limited. You couldn't really learn anything. You can only unlock what's already there in the first place.
I suppose it's kind of a form of predestination, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it would be if you're born a dinner lady, you are always going to be a dinner lady, and you'll never be able to get out of that.
It might explain why I'm getting such bad headaches at the moment. Maybe I've got to an age now where I have learnt, I've unlocked all my special abilities now.
Yeah.
So when I try to learn something else, like Adobe or something,
yeah,
everything just shuts down and I just get a headache.
I find it quite an interesting field, especially with Mormonism, which was let's call it a sect, it's a religion, Christian sect, came about in the 19th century. They were quite big on the idea of pre-existence, and I said, I think they refer to it as pre-mortal existence. So the founder of Mormonism, Joseph Smith, believed that the spirit of Christ appeared in a pre-mortal form to him, but also that all souls were eternal. So there was this pre-existence, this pre-mortal existence. And then to come into the world, you kind of had to go through these stages of learning to then be released like a salmon.
So according to that testimony then, Diana's question about, if so, why don't unborn souls haunt us? That would be a report of that.
Well, the thing, some people
believe
they do.
And not just any soul, by the way. Jesus, if you don't mind.
Yeah. well, it varies. It varies from person to person. Like, certainly I've been really, really deep in, like, periodical world at the minute, looking through a lot of 19th century, like, religious periodicals, spiritualist periodicals. And, listener, he's yawning very visibly as I say this.
I did. You don't need to point out when you can see me yawning. I did hide it.
I feel like I do. It feels personal at this stage.
I've been up all night with my dodgy finger.
I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry.
Not like that.
Well, in a lot of these Christian spiritualist crossover, there's a lot of debate about the nature of the soul for this very purpose. So to identify the notion of spirits and what spirits can come back and communicate, can unborn spirits come back and communicate, can very, very young spirits come back and communicate. So obviously, there were never any satisfactory answers, but there was certainly a wide field of beliefs in regards to the viability of souls, the ages of souls, if they were recycled, if they'd always existed and took on many forms. So it's interesting, but certainly religions have taken those thoughts and formed them into shiny bound books far more than any spiritualist or esoterotic movement ever did.
Well, there's more questions on the way for you, by the way. Is weird, isn't it? They only got two comments on your Patreon, but people left comments on my Patreon asking you questions and things on your Patreon about me.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
A faction's forming here.
I feel so.
It's like we're getting a whole new podcast here. In fact, it is a whole new podcast because Kate has now set a precedent of saying what the other person is doing that you can't hear or see, listener. So I'm going to do that as well now, by the way, just very quickly. Hey, listener, just before we started recording, Kate took a bra off and pulled it through the arm of a T-shirt.
Oh, shut up!
See, now that's what we're doing now. True or false? TRF.
I'm at home. It was tight.
Just flung it to the other side of the room. Like the worst OnlyFans I've ever been on. And the only OnlyFans as well. PDT, I would like to ask Kate... Well then, ask Kate then. Don't have me as a middleman. What percentage of paranormal goings-on, in her professional opinion, are like this one? This is the thing we spoke about last week. The
vertical plane.
Yeah. very clearly just pranks that got way out of hand. I dispute that it was a prank, by the way. I don't think prank's the right word. I'm being pedantic, but I don't think prank is the right word. I don't think it was a prank. I don't think it was a practical joke.
Well, I'm not sure if... I think prank can be quite a fluffy word and can imply that it's like a well-thought-out thing. But I certainly think... It's such a broad field, but if we talk about investigations, like public investigations, where you'd pay to go along on a ghost hunt somewhere, and people need results for those things. If you go somewhere and the ghosts aren't playing ball, shall we say, someone then may be inclined to fake paranormal phenomena. So these people feel like they haven't had their money wasted, or, you know, it wouldn't reflect badly on them, or they wouldn't get a bad review somewhere. And people do. These companies that will go and give you full experiences in a place, you know, they tell you the history of a paranormal place, what they're going to do. And if the ghosts aren't playing ball, you could then just get ripped apart by someone that says this is a con, there wasn't any ghosts.
Which could then gather momentum, because Pete said got way out of hand. I've argued this previously. They don't get out of hand, they gain momentum. Yes. They come to fruition is what happens. You know, that's what they want from it.
Yeah. Well, I would say on the other side of things, I think there are a lot of instances of deliberate deception in certainly in public paranormal events.
Yeah.
No one that I personally know who runs events, thankfully, because there'd be some very awkward discussions. But I've certainly been in supposedly haunted places with, you know, the owners or the tour guides and so forth. And if no paranormal phenomena was happening, quite conveniently, when they were around, suddenly a table was lobbing itself across a room.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's a prank that gets out of hand, but it almost becomes a financial necessity to have paranormal phenomena. But when we're talking about big poltergeist cases and things like that, I don't know, because we've had this before when... You can have a long string of unexplained phenomena, and if you have one instance of deception, all the dominoes fall. So you can't really take anything before that with the same seriousness as you did before.
Yeah, well, the Enfield haunting is a good example of that.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Especially
they were
with
caught
Enfield.
Faking it.
Yeah.
Which, I'd argue, does at least potentially discredit everything that came before and everything that came after it.
Exactly. Well, it's like, so brilliant, I think even better shown... Again, because it's a narrative piece, in Ghost Watch, the Stephen Volk BBC special that came out that terrified the nation, that was loosely based on Enfield. And within that, because the girls needed phenomena to be captured on camera, they faked a part of it. But it turned out that, spoilers for something that came out in about 1992, it shows that actually there were phenomena happening.
Yeah.
And although they kind of discounted everything because the girls faked this one thing, after that it was shown that there was something going on. There was something...
But that's a fictional...
Exactly.
But anyway, isn't it?
Exactly.
As is the Enfield haunting. Well, for that matter.
But also, within, you know, like the Enfield haunting, like very similar poltergeist cases that revolve around a young teenage girl, all of those have... broadly had these theories of intentional deception and pranks applied to them, like the Fox sisters, who, you know, said that they were pranking their family by either dropping an apple on the floor, banging it beneath the floorboards, or clicking their toe joints. You know, this whole roster of paranormal methodologies. But also from that, in the 19th century and into the early 20th century, of people like Frank Podmore, who was a very well-respected writer and paranormal investigator. He wrote the History of Modern Spiritualism, I think in two volumes. And he popularised, as far as I remember, the naughty little girl theory that went on to explain away a lot of these paranormal poltergeist phenomena that surrounded young teenage girls.
Yeah, we've discussed that before on here, the naughty little girl theory. The Enfield thing, just to go back to that for a moment, I look at that a little bit deeper than just saying, well, you've lied once, so you're probably lying before or after, or you may be lying before or after.
Yes.
Which is the idea that to retract it and say, well, no, yes, we did fake it that time, but that was the only time, is So the one time you faked it, you got caught out. And it only happened one time. It's like when people turn up on To Catch a Predator and say, I've never done this before. You know what I mean? It's that same argument. Yes. And should be looked on with the same bemusement of going, all right, so the one time you've done this, that you've never done before,
yeah,
we've caught you.
Yeah. But it's the same with a lot of mediums as well. There was,
but it's given derision. That, you know, that argument,
yes, yeah,
is, oh, I think, rightly given derision. Because it's like,
yes,
don't be stupid, you've never done it before.
Yeah.
We've caught you. You're caught. I'm on about the Enfield girls now. Not
okay, not just To Catch a Predator.
Yeah.
Well, the same would apply for mediums. Like in one of Doris Stokes, the like 1970s, 80s, caftan-wearing medium. She wrote, inverted commas, several volumes of her autobiography. And in one of the early ones, which I think is Voices in My Ear, she recounted in this book, it wasn't public knowledge, but she admitted that on one stage when the spirits weren't playing ball, she faked messages until one of her tutors called her out, and she was so ashamed with herself that she learned from that and she never did it again.
Yeah.
So that again is taking that narrative and reusing it to emphasise your own legitimacy within the paranormal field, saying, it's like smoking, tried it, didn't like it, never going to do it again. You know?
Yeah, I mean, Doris Stokes got away with murder because she looked like everybody's nan.
And she gave everyone flowers.
No, but she was like a lovely thing, you know what I mean? But as is often the case with people who either present themselves or come across as being fluffy and innocent, you can be up to really bad things. But PDT, just to wrap that one up, was very specific for a percentage. PDT wanted a percentage. Of paranormal goings on, who in your professional opinion, so you are going on the record in your professional opinion here, are very clearly just pranks, Pete's words, that got way out of hand. What percentage, please, Kate?
Can I just clarify with you, you know, via PDT, are we talking about all video phenomena? All reported phenomena? Unsure.
Shall I go back to PDT and then get him to pass on another message to my patient?
Yeah, I think that would be good. I mean, okay, I can give you different ones. I mean, I think with video, it's far higher.
No. I'll wait till Pete gets in touch with me on my Patreon to ask you a question. Next one, and this is the one that, by the way, is filling my iPad screen.
I saw this. It's substantial.
This. I've not read it, by the way, obviously. I'm annoyed that I've got to read it now. I'm going to make an exception for the last time to read something of this length.
Okay.
Can't read stuff of this length. May make wonderful points, but yeah. Just Andre. In the same vein as Ken's over-defensiveness being the giveaway for Ian regarding his lack of sincerity, for me the tell is the entire dynamic between the supposed three parties from three different time periods. I haven't read the book, so for all I know it does get into this at some point. But from how Kate presented it, it seemed as though Ken was doing all the asking and Thomas was doing all the answering, despite Thomas's time period being more or less a known quantity to Ken, whereas Thomas would have had no idea of what to expect from the world of the late 20th century. Right from the outset, why didn't Thomas seem every bit as, if not more, astounded as Ken to find himself suddenly conversing with a stranger across a gap of nearly half a millennium? And even if we're to assume that his absence of initial surprise was due to the residents of 2109 having reached out to him beforehand in order to set up his and Ken's correspondence, shouldn't Thomas's own curiosity about the world 400 years in the future have taken precedence all the more immediately over confirming with Ken the name and age of the king or texting him updates about how lovely the walk he took that afternoon was? Of course, once you start going down this logical track, the real kicker becomes the future people. For all the attention the book pays to Thomas's time-displaced use of English language, did the future people at any point employ words, turns of phrase, grammatical constructs, etc., unrecognisable to Ken or the reader. Were the future people just temporal terrorists doing a really substandard job of trying to throw a monkey wrench into the cogs of history? Or will human consciousness evolve so exponentially far in the next 86 years that the motivations of people from that time will be as inscrutable to us as those of a Lovecraftian elder god, and in so doing drive them to apply unimaginably advanced technology to the task of making pen pals out of two historical randos and absolutely nothing else? And, of course, why is Thomas remotely the focus of Ken's story in the first place? If he had insights from the 22nd century, he could have made at least some attempt to glean other than the fact that statements allegedly received from the past can be corroborated and used to help leverage a book deal, while century-distant premonitions cannot. I'm just going to pause there to address that, because we are about halfway through the comment.
Okay. Okay, so 2109...
Sorry, mate, no time for you to talk.
Sorry. Well, when 2109 were responding via the computer, in the actual book itself, as I've said, it was quite hefty for what it was. There were other players that came in. There was another bloke who was mainly a UFO expert who began chatting with 2109, but I chopped him out. Sorry.
No, thank you.
Broadly speaking... The language that 2109 used was unusual, but unusual in a sense of it was really grammatically odd. So it was quite arrogant, it was quite forthright in the tone of the messages, but they weren't using... Like, language evolves quite dramatically, as we've known from poggers and dude today, but grammatically speaking and more widely speaking, over that period of time, language would have evolved considerably more than what 2109 was suggesting, but it was kind of just like a jumble, like you jumbled up a boggle board, but it was all still English.
Okay, shall I go back in?
Yep, go on.
Mike Stocklaser, most famous for creating the Plinkett reviews of the Star Wars prequels and other movies, I think I've seen some of those, who is like Kate in that he is fascinated by the paranormal and finds certain evidence compelling, though not definitive, was at one point discussing the ongoing antics of Zach Bagans. Do we know who this is?
We do know Zach Bagans. Zach Bagans is the lead investigator, creator, producer of Ghost Adventures and owns a haunted museum in Las Vegas.
Okay. And made the observation that when he's attended ghost tours, there are always one or two people in the group who claim to start feeling faint, cold, or otherwise like the ghost in question has directed its attentions to them. Although Mike and his co-host Jay acknowledge that plenty of these people may well have been so entrenched in genuine belief that they began psychogenically giving themselves ghostly symptoms, they also made the point that the human need to feel special is so powerful that not only can it motivate you to fake ghostly symptoms to make yourself a star among your ghost enthusiast group, but it can be the underlying reason that people actually do believe something sincerely with such a force that they unwittingly create false evidence for it. There's good reason that Ian's refrain throughout the run of the Parapod was, quote, for attention. The Doddleston messages, again going purely off how they've been presented on the podcast, are interesting to me because they make for a good story, but because they're one of the more flagrant instances of this principle in practice that I've yet seen. Why does Thomas seemingly have no strong feelings or desires pertaining to his extraordinary situation? Because he's not the main character, TM. Ken is. Not only are the future people a footnote in the story to Ken, because he's considered them as such, they're also, in defiance of all logic, a footnote to Thomas, because Ken considered them as such. If a potential element of the story wasn't pertinent to Ken specifically, then it never entered the picture, even if Ken's story stayed flawlessly consistent. Thomas's language really was indecipherable from the genuine article, and we even went so far as to accept the premise that intertemporal communication was possible, brackets, let alone with technology less than a century away from our own, you'd still be able to tell in a heartbeat that the story was a fabrication because the only figures in the story who behave remotely like human beings are the ones telling it. If you're looking into claims of the esoteric, then this sort of main character syndrome is absolutely crucial to keep on watch for. Adieu, I added that. Thank you, Just Andre.
Yes, thank you, Just Andre.
I love that Just Andre's name is Just Andre, as if boasting brevity. And then follows it up with that.
Yeah.
Which was very, very well written and very entertaining to read.
Yes, yeah.
Just didn't leave us much room.
What? No, I think...
Maybe
I mean,
blog it.
Andre makes excellent points. I mean, if we had someone from the future just pop into our house, the last thing we'd go and say to them is, well, I'm off for a walk this afternoon.
Yeah.
Need to see my mate down the road, so I'll see you later. No, would you... You wouldn't, no matter how normalised, I suppose, communication with the future could become over a couple of years. I think really, from what I remember, Thomas was mostly annoyed, at least in the early communications, about the state of his house, because his house had become subdivided into several smaller cottages.
Yeah.
But then later, as the communications spread more within the household and Debbie, if we remember, it was Ken's girlfriend at the time. She started having visions of Thomas and interacted with him. Or in the case of the 1996
Rudes did Rudes, according to that documentary. Yeah.
Oh, she had like a Mills and Boone moment with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very soft focus.
Do you think they're swingers? Spectral swingers?
Maybe. Maybe this could kind of fall into the, you know, sex and the paranormal, incubus, succubus.
Yeah.
World of things. People marrying ghosts and having it off with them.
Full disclosure, I think my concentration threshold has now been battered. I think this is the part of the podcast now. As we're running way over, I'm just going to start being stupid because I'm tired.
Okay.
But genuinely, thank you for your comment. It was obviously considered and very well thought out. And boy, oh boy, did you indulge that feeling. I absolutely relate to that. I do stuff like that all the time. Start writing something short before you know it.
Oh, God,
it's a masterpiece. Joel Fowles, mainly commenting because my hometown, Nantwich, was mentioned. That's more like it, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I get that. Every time Cleethorpes is mentioned on telly, I do a little cheer.
Yeah. Joel says, and to be fair, although absolutely lovely, going back, it's a bit like travelling back to the 16th century in itself, which is why I said I like it.
Okay, I've never been personally. So.
Oh, it's really nice. I've only done gigs there, really, so I've only seen it for a little bit of time. I don't think I've been there in my new life of freedom, but I remember it being pretty nice. And final comment, Seth Zard. It's discouraged to call people thick because it's very generalised and doesn't count for all sorts of abilities. Saying they haven't been taught critical thinking skills or they're susceptible to manipulation stroke gullible is probably fair game. So I'm going to do this just bit by bit.
Okay.
Again, apologies if I come across as abrupt. It's not my intention to come across as abrupt. I don't really know how else to say it without taking ages to explain what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So on the subject of doesn't count for all sorts of abilities, I think there's a there's an aspect to this, which is people speaking about things they're not educated to speak on.
Yes.
So whilst it doesn't take into account somebody's abilities in understanding something or what have you. That's me saying that. That's not Seth saying that. I guess then my point of contention would be, well, they should shut up then. You know, no more than it would be fine for me to see someone broken down at the side of the road, pull over and try to fix their engine and act like I could fix their engine.
Yeah.
When I don't have a clue what's going on under that bonnet.
Yeah.
So it's the same sort of thing of going, I'll do this, I can do this, I know about this sort of thing, when I don't. And you're just going to cause more problems by trying to do that because you have, I guess, prompted and promoted a trust in you that you do know what you're talking about. So when people speak with authority, which, by the way, is a pretty mega trait in particularly dumb people.
Yeah, I think another clarification, really, that we need to make there is, you know, within dinner ladies and calling people divs and things like that, we'd never really apply the terms of dinner ladies or divs, especially to people who had learning difficulties or were neurodivergent. I think that might be a bit of a concern that people would think, oh, we're going to call that person a div as some kind of slur. Whereas we're not at all.
Well, no, but no, clarification on that for me is I don't think that neurodivergence is a definitive...
Oh, no, it's not like a one-size-fits-all stamp.
You know, there's plenty of people Well, I mean, I would personally argue that everyone is neurodivergent. It's not even a thing for just some people. Everyone is that. There's a reason it's called a spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
We're all on it, all of us. So I couldn't exclude somebody, you know, from being called a div. All right, the best way of putting it would be, I wouldn't call them a div because of that.
That, yes. That's what I was trying to say.
You probably said it better than me. Sethar continues, in Kanye's case, there are even more issues as he's clearly having a severe mental health episode, so calling him thick feels wrong. He's also an undeniably skilled musician and hugely successful businessman. That also ties into the issue with people who are skilled in one thing thinking their skill spreads to more areas than it does. I feel like that might have been a veiled attack on me.
Oh dear.
Potentially. However, I do take great exception, by the way, to the idea that somebody having a severe mental health episode, or mental health episode, severe or otherwise, gets a pass on bad behaviour, right? And I am on the record with this. It's one of the things in my attitude to mental health that I've been unwavering on from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Because you have mental health issues does not excuse your behaviour, does not make your behaviour fine or allowable in any way, or, you know, put an arm around you, that sort of thing. There's a caveat of temporary insanity is certainly a caveat there when something happens in a moment. But the stuff that's been going on with Kanye West has been going on for far too long for it to be a temporary insanity thing or a moment in their existence, right? So I think there's a potential danger in applying that saying it feels wrong. I think it shouldn't feel wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's regardless of what your mental health issues are, and as I speak as someone who's, you know, in that bracket, it can never be a let off for your behaviour. You're always responsible ultimately for your own behaviour, either in making sure that you're mentally fit enough to operate in society, or in throwing your hands up when you have done something bad. You have to remain responsible for that. And I think there's a danger in dismissing that. I know that you don't mean that as a dismissal, Sethar, but in going, oh no, but they're poorly.
Yeah.
Because I also think we can also apply, a lot of alsos in that sentence, we can also apply, there's another one, the idea of drunk. So there's an argument that, oh, they were drunk when they did that. I firmly believe, you've got to have it in you to be able to do that. So I'm relatively certain, in fact, I'm 100% certain, that no matter how drunk I got at any given time, I would not behave in the way that I have seen drunken people behave. I would not glass someone. I simply wouldn't do it because it's not in me to begin with. So I think whilst a mental health issue may make you a bit loosey-goosey in sort of, you know, being who you actually are deep down, you have to be that thing deep down to let that monster out of the box.
Mm.
That's what I think with okay. that. I know there's radicalisation ideas and all that sort of thing, but
I think there certainly is. And there's certainly a lot of religious radicalisation that's happening that pushes the lack of necessity of medication in order to stabilise people with severe mental health issues.
Yeah.
And I think that is arguably one of the more damaging, radicalising roads that's happening at the minute, especially in America again, that isn't being addressed.
Okay, well, there's a potential caveat there, is that if you're having a mental health episode and that's when you're radicalised, then the knock-on effect, you are vulnerable at that point.
So
to being turned into somebody else. I still think, in my heart of hearts, and I'm willing to debate this or be proven wrong with this, but I do, my present feeling is you still have to have it in you.
Mm.
So to be radicalised by, I don't know, BNP or whatever the equivalent of them are now, you know, that sort of thing, you know, kind of a right-wing underground group that does horrific things. I think you still have to have it in you in the first instance.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe you can just be told a story that you then subscribe to. Something you hadn't even thought of in your life before, maybe?
I think a lot of it just comes down to opportunism and getting to someone when they're weak or vulnerable or looking for something that you convince them that you can provide and only you can provide.
Which is what Annette said, like, back 2 hours ago when we started this podcast. It was, you know, Annette said the same thing. You know, it's a potential feeling of inclusion. I do understand that, and I do understand the nuance of this. Mm. I think I am regularly speaking in shorthand. Because, for the sake of brevity, because look what happens when I don't. So you know what I mean? I am being flippant, but I'm trying to acknowledge my flippancy within it.
Mm-hmm.
But just from time to time, I just go, oh, you idiots. I can't believe I'm even having this discussion again. You know what I mean? I do have that emotive thing. And obviously, and I get stirred with things like the Kanye thing we've started talking about now, which, by the way, I will also acknowledge, this is exactly what I'm talking about. We're intellectualising the debate here. You know, you and I are doing it. We're intellectualising the debate about something that somebody said, which was just a stupid, horrible thing to say.
Mm.
Yet we're talking about, we're doing the thing that I've criticised so far about it. Exactly the same thing. Seth Dodd continues, in terms of addressing it, once it's already been spread by people like the Daily Mail, a balance needs to be struck. I've taken the emotive language out of this, Seth Dodd. Forgive me, I hope you understand why. A balance needs to be struck between not spreading it more and making sure that clear and comprehensive debunkings are easily out there. Sorry if I've missed the recording. Really enjoyed the podcast. You would have missed the recording if we hadn't postponed last night, but you didn't. You got in there. I'm speaking just for myself here. I am aware of nuance. And I am quite regularly just sighing my response out to these things.
Yeah. And I think they're right. In a perfect world, any of these ridiculous, inflammatory or dangerous statements would be very promptly followed up with a full debunking and a basic, easy to read breakdown of the truth.
Yeah.
And maybe that would be the way if we didn't have so many huge, privately owned media outlets whose sole purpose is just to rein in more cash for the CEO or the shareholders. Well, saying there's a ghost will get more, just to bring it back to something vaguely paranormal, you know, to say there's a ghost, click on here for a picture, you're going to get so many more clicks that translate to so much more ad revenue than if you put out another article that used the same amount of bandwidth, for example, that would then say, this was a fraud, this is from a damaging person, please be aware of this. So if it was like 100,000 clicks versus 1,000 clicks.
Yeah.
If you're purely money and engagement driven, you're not going to be unbiased. You're not going to do unbiased reporting, and that would go across the board.
It's going on in the UK at the moment. There's a major news story at the moment when I'm recording this that is, you know, really based around getting as many clicks as possible and selling as many newspapers as possible. And, you know, when you boil it down to its roots, that's what it's actually about. The way 100%. That the story has been presented, you know, it's not about what's happened, which it should be. It's about how can we eke this out
and make this one into more issue, thing. One more article, one more click. Yeah.
But there we go. It's all discussion. Every discussion's welcome. Every last bit of it. Should we wrap up? This has been stupidly long.
It has been. Well, thank you very much for listening. You can contact us via many, many different means. You can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/IanBoldsworth and patreon.com/burialsandbeyond. You can find us on Facebook at Loopholes Podcast, on Instagram at Loopholes Pod, on Twitter at Loopholes Pod, and you can send us an email at loopholespodcast@gmail.com. I've been Kate Cheryl.
I've been Ian Boldsworth. And thank you very much for joining us this week. I had to finish it off because basically the Zoom meeting has just closed and I hold you, just Andre, completely responsible. We've done 2 full Zoom meetings here, mate. Lots of love to everyone. We shall see you again next week. Bye-bye. Kate sends her love. Bye.
Loopholes is an Infinite Hermit production in association with Burials and Beyond, with Kate Cheryl and Ian Boldsworth. Music by Thomas Funderay, produced by Ian Boldsworth.